The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Bang, dang. Hey, how's everybody
How you doing?
I'm doing fucking great. It's hotter than hell in my apartment. But
it is hot. It's very hot.
It's cooler than yesterday. We've been but still
cooler today.
Cooler today. Gonna be warm tomorrow. I've been working my butt. I'm like on one of those stretches where I have like 4 or 5 days of stuff.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow I literally go sit at this desk at this computer from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Sure.
I have a little break in there, but it's like one of those days. And then
yikes.
Thursday I work, and then I go to the theater and I work, and then Friday I work, and then I got to do laundry. But yeah, but it's okay. It's good stuff. A lot of theater stuff, so I'm happy about that.
Yes.
We love to see it.
Yeah. Love to see the
Siege, are you working on any theater stuff?
I'm doing a bunch of admin for a friend of the pod, Travis Santos Gatz. He's got like a year-long project he wants to do, and he needs help with admin stuff, and that's I know how to make, thanks to Scott and Sacred Fools, I know how to drop a budget. I'm gonna learn how to drop a film budget this time too. So learning new stuff.
You?
No, but okay. I love the guy. You know, you have some people you'd like do anything for.
Yeah.
He's one of those ride or die types. You two are for me too.
Aw.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what I learned this week?
What?
In spreadsheet land.
Hmm.
I learned how to do conditional formatting for a cell. So if it equals a value or a text, I can change the color. So if it was like pass, then it's green. If it's fail, it's red. But you can do it with any color. So now I'm like, now everything's got conditional format.
That's like when I learned how to sum.
Right?
It's my favorite thing.
I've gotten pretty good at doing formulas and stuff now. I can't quite do pivot tables and fancier stuff, but...
Sure, sure.
I mean, you know, this is a horrible, horrible discussion. I'm so sorry.
No, it's the best.
It's boring
as
shit.
The best of the best.
Scott, you had some news. You heard some LA theater news.
Yeah, it's all over the place. The Geffen announced it today. I'll read from Instagram, from the Geffen Playhouse account. We are excited to share today that Academy Award for Moonlight and Peabody Award winner for David Makes Man and Tony Award nominee for Choir Boy, Terrell Alvin McCraney, has been named the artistic director of the Geffen Playhouse. And
dope.
I think it's an awesome change and, you know, exciting for LA theater. Geffen is a cool fucking couple spaces.
Hell yeah,
over there,
it is.
You know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah, it rules.
And a cool, cool part of town to go to see theater.
On the flip side of that, I had Google threw an article at me about like theater that's happening this fall and winter.
Mm.
And it was all New York, it was all stuff on Broadway. There was maybe one. Oh, the one thing I was excited about was they talked about Chicago theater and the Sufjan Stevens concept musical about his Illinois album is now getting a full run in Chicago in January.
Oh, right cool. on.
And
yeah.
I might fucking fly to Chicago just to go to it. And the only thing they mentioned about LA was Center having to cancel that season. It's like, thanks. Thanks, Theater World. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Larissa Fasthorse, though, there's been some more, like, talk with her manager team. We might be getting her on the pod officially. We were
going
to have to wait till she had the show coming to CTG, but I think now we might still get it. Also, Thanksgiving play is about to come
I was throwing that in my spotlights at the end.
Where is it going to be?
It's not in LA, but it's going to be at the Santa Barbara. It's the Ensemble Theater Company.
Yes.
And one of my good friends, and I know, Scott, you know her. Bailey, I'm not sure if you know Devon Siddell, who's an amazing actress. Mm. She got a call last week, and she hadn't gotten the part, but I guess someone had to drop out, and they called, and they said, can you move to Santa Barbara on Monday?
Wow.
And so she's going to be in it, and I'm going to put that show in for – I know it's not LA, but I'm excited for her, and I'm excited they're putting up
it
Fast Horses.
It was in LA range. We're going to count it.
A local spotlight. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And also, like, they tend to cast people out of LA.
Mm-hmm. You know? Should probably audition for them.
Yeah. I've heard they've done some cool stuff. I think it's the same company. I assume it is. They did High Fidelity years ago that I heard went really well. It's Tom Kitt musical. And then they also did American Psycho, the musical, which I know got kind of not a lot of love off of Broadway, but I know a lot of people really love it. And it was on the West End for a while and I think did really well. And apparently, like, in a smaller space, it kind of rules. Mm. So I'm intrigued.
All right.
Sounds good to me. I kind of want to do American Psycho, the musical. You guys want to do it?
Yeah. I'm down for anything.
Is it theater? Question mark. Speaking of, welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm Jay Bailey Bertram.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
Truth. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week we are returning again to our early form that we did for three whole seasons, discussing the evolutions of the great playwrights by taking a macro look at three of their plays. And this is part two of three of our mini-series covering the works of Euripides. That's right, it's Euripides Nuts.
Yeah!
We're mature.
Mature.
We're mature. It's fucking hilarious.
No, it is fucking hilarious. You're right.
We talk about theater raw on this fucking show. Raw, dude.
Raw dog.
Speaking of raw, did anybody get to listen to the end of our Oliver episode with my where I added?
No, I have it on my list. I keep forgetting to get to it. I'm going to get to it.
I did get to Laundry and Bourbon, and you're right. It was very funny.
It's a funny episode. We talk about nonsense a lot. But last week we covered Medea, Euripides' Medea.
Uh-huh.
And this week we're covering Electra, which is Scott's pick.
Yeah.
And then next week we'll be covering Trojan Women, which I think is my pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll get into it. Did you guys have fun reading this one?
I sat down and got it in one reading. Like, I really enjoyed it personally. So.
Yeah,
I got through it in one reading after I'd started reading the wrong version. I started reading Sophocles' version. Sophocles. I'm like, cool. And then I kind of looked up at the corner and it's like, Sophocles. I'm like, this isn't the right fucking one.
Because I was thinking about it. I was like, I feel like I've only read the Sophocles one. I don't think I've read this one. Hmm. But then I was like kind of researching and stuff. And this one is the more... No, this is the one that more people I think produce.
Uh-huh.
But they're both basically the same story. It's just who you prefer, whose voice you prefer.
Right. Yeah. I didn't get very far in the Sophocles version to do a true analysis, but just in some of my research, the difference is sort of just on the focus of character motivations is different between each one, and and the themes kind of get turned a little bit, like they're both distinctly revenge, I think, but also it's about justice.
Right, it's sort of like we talked about on our last, the histories, Shakespeare's histories, where we talked about, like, there were like 10 Henry the Sixth plays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His was the one that did the best.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. It's like there were 10 Henry the Fifths. His is the only one that lived on.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of thing. And I think it was the same thing here. It's like they had these stories that were the myths. And it's sort of like, I want to compare it to Marvel in a way where it's like we grew up on these comics And then now we're getting to see them in real life, and we're like, oh! And it's like, if you grew up on the stories of Electra and Iphigenia and Agamemnon and Troy and you know, and Menelaus, and then all of a sudden you get to see that in real life. It's like endgame level shit where you're like, you know,
the endgame of ancient Greeks.
Kind of rules.
I actually kind of have a hot take on this play. I'm excited to talk about it with y'all.
Good. Well, we'll get into Electra in a bit. I want to do something that I do on the second episode of every playwright miniseries, which, by the way, we just covered a playwright. We should have maybe taken a little more time between playwrights, but I'm glad we're back. I'm glad we're back.
We're fine. We're in a flow. Yeah, it's all good.
It's because we had to edit because of losing Larissa and all that stuff. So that's why this.
No, we did good audibles.
Saying,
unlike Aaron Rodgers, am I right? No. And we've lost all the sports fans.
No, we've gained the sports fans. We lost the theater people, which is our only listener. Okay, let me step through this. Now, I want to be clear that this is based on the records that we have that we are not sure are they're ancient records, right? We know very little about how much these have been recreated or whatever it may be, but I don't know what you would need to tell us a different date about when a play was I don't know why that would need to be done, but it's possible. But these are sort of based on the Dionysia winners. That's only really, or like the list of the things at the Dionysia. We don't really know when things were first produced. It's possible he produced something outside of the Dionysia and then put it up there, right? We don't know. But we assume that this is the order. So,
do we want to play the starting stinger?
Okay, go ahead.
Chronology.
Here we go. We're starting we're in the BCs before cell phones. Okay.
Before
this
cell phones.
I like that.
We're at what? 2,500 years ago?
Well, Electra was in 420 BCE.
This is 438 BC.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. BCE, whatever you want to
fucking say. Yeah, so like 2,700 years ago.
Okay. No.
2,500.
Okay.
2,500. You're right.
Oh.
We are not strong at math.
I'm great at math, but not right now. Okay, go on, Bailey. Sorry.
I will come on.
Come on. Bailey. Come on.
The first play that he wrote was a satire. A satirical play. Called Alcestis.
Alcestis?
Is that it?
Alcestes?
Is that how you say it?
I'm guessing.
Sounds
Alcestes.
Great. Sounds great.
Sure.
It's an Athenian tragedy with notes of theater.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Satire.
Greeks came up with the idea of satire, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm just saying.
Oh, do you mean satyr? Is it S T Y R?
S A T Y R.
Satyr. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. It's like that a satyr to me is like it has a chorus maybe and like usually like it can be a comedy or a tragedy and it's like
but it's inverse. very structured. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, that's what I think of. But.
Well, and when I was when we were doing Medea research last week, they said something about Euripides. He explored satire but with tragedy, and you usually see it in comedy because it's kind of easy, but it's more complicated and even more interesting in tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And the word then grows to satire, which then I think becomes
satire.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now after that is 431 Medea.
Ooh-ooh.
He writes that in 431.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll never talk about it. No, we talked about it last week. then he does, and I'm going to butcher this one, Heraclidae.
Okay.
Heracleidae.
Okay.
H-E-R-A-C-L-E-I-D-A-E. Heraclidae. It's gone. It's a political patriotic drama in 430. Okay.
Okay.
He does Hippolytus in 428. It's a tragedy. He does Andromache.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tragedy that is not produced in Athens at the Dionysia.
Oh.
Somewhere else. Then you have Hecuba in 424, a tragedy. The Suppliants. So this is the first time it's not a name, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's also called the Suppliant Women or the Suppliant Women. And it's a political drama. I'm not going to go too much into all these because there's a shit ton.
Sure.
There's Electra, which we're talking about today. There's Heracles, the Trojan Women, which we'll talk about next week. That's in 415. In 414, we have Iphigenia in Taurus.
Mm-hmm. Taurus, like the bull.
Yeah. It looks like it's...
Scott's huge knowledge of Greek mythology.
This is his first, like, romantic melodrama, sort of.
Oh.
Which is kind of cool. And then you have Ion, which is also a romantic melodrama.
Now that's a cool title.
Ion.
It is.
Ion.
Yeah. It's about the orphan Ion, a willing servant in Apollo's temple, who inadvertently discovers his biological origins. I don't know what that means, but it sounds great. Helen, as in Helen of
Troy?
Troy.
It's his romance that apparently is believed to be performed. It says 412 here, but a lot of people believe that this was like a sister play to Iphigenia and Taurus.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of interesting. Phoenician Women in 410 is another big tragedy. He's coming back to tragedy. Orestes tragedy, the Bacchae in 405 tragedy, mm-hmm. which was posthumously.
Posthumously, yeah.
Ooh, I got it out. Posthumously produced in 405, and these all were Iphigenia in Aulis, which is a tragedy, also known as Iphigenia in Aulis. It's the same thing. Okay. Rhesus, Rhesus.
Mm-hmm.
You're a racist. And then that authorship has been disputed. Some people believe it wasn't him at all.
Okay.
And then Cyclops.
Ooh, I want to see that.
Cyclops.
Yeah, we
Cyclops.
Don't have a... It's about the X-Men character. Scott Summers. And no, it's Cyclops is a satyr play. The only full extent example of this genre that he really did.
Mm.
Okay. But it we have no date on it. We have no idea when it was written.
Hmm.
Does it, wasn't it still exist?
I bet it does. Let's see.
Because they said a bunch of, only a few of them survived.
It's based closely on the episode of the Cyclops from the Odyssey.
Great.
It would been the fourth part of a tetralogy presented by Euripides in a dramatic festival in Athens. But he never put it up. Yeah, it never happened.
Wow.
The play is set in Sicily at Mount Etna.
Oh, man, what a fucking place to be in
Sounds
that time.
Sounds fucking dope. Let's see if anybody's ever put it up. I bet there's a ton of translations of it, so it definitely still exists.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we should find that.
Okay.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I love
so
a creature play.
The thing I'm not going to go through, because there's so many of them, is the lost and fragmentary plays.
Mm.
There are so many that we have like pieces of, or that we know he wrote, but we've never been able to find the text for. He has apparently... one of the really big ones was his Sisyphus.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Was unfinished, and people said that it was supposed to be, like, absolutely incredible. But obviously we have no record of it, so we, you know. You know. But kind of cool.
Yeah.
I wonder
and
what
apparently
the...
it was going to perform with Trojan Women or something like that.
Wow. Say that again?
It was going to perform with Trojan Women.
Oh,
think,
okay.
And he just never did. Like, it was part of that.
Okay.
I wonder what the oldest
thematic trilogy
versions are. Like, surely we don't have any written in his hand, right?
It's possible there's something, but I bet you it's monk, you know,
yeah.
monks making prints for
yeah, yeah.
hundreds
mm-hmm.
of years before we ever get to, yeah.
Because we
would know
Catholics
that.
Had
we would
their
know
hands on
that.
A bunch of that shit, too.
I mean, Jesus,
that's true.
We got 1,000 years before there are even monks.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's true. I'm wondering like what the I mean, I guess I could do more research, and that's what this podcast should be, is like teaching people things. But like, you know, I might do a little more research before next week and just find out exactly like, yeah, like what is the oldest known piece of text, like, even from text. This time? Like, is there, do we have anything from the Dionysia that is more than like a, you know, a pamphlet type thing, you know? I don't know.
The Kish tablet is the oldest confirmed writing from Mesopotamia in 3500 BCE.
Of course, but that's not what we're looking for. No, and I mean, it's not impossible for there to be, you know, text that he wrote himself. It's just like, how was that preserved? Is it still preserved? Is it in the Alexandria Library? Like, I don't, when it burned down, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Right.
Do we have any idea? And we'll find out before next week. But anyway, there's a million plays that he didn't finish. I'm sure there's things that I missed in here, and I apologize. But I'm just reading off a website, so you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
So,
no.
Those are the main ones. Those are the ones that remain.
The ones that remain.
The mm-hmm. ones that remain.
Yes. Now and this week, go ahead, Scott.
I was just gonna say it's just cool. It's cool to talk about him. It's pretty insane when you think about it. When you think about first of all how the population probably was 99% illiterate. So only a very small amount of people could have written it or kept it or done something with it. And the fact that that history and humanity has kept those alive, Euripides, Sophocles, all of them, it's just kind of stunning to me that we're talking about a half a millennium before Christ was born that these plays are being performed.
Yeah.
It's also cool to think too, like I it blew my mind when I found out that the ancient Greek time, like Greece was only like a big thing for about 100 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Before Rome came in. And the fact that all of this stuff came out of those 100 years and just all the stuff that still remains, whether it's government or writings or themes or whatever, it's fucking cool that it's
architecture.
Yeah, what an important 100
metaphors.
Years.
Like, even, you know what I mean? Like, it's like we still have like sayings. That's the craziest part to me. Or even like, now this is in debt to more of the other things, but like the Oedipal complex, right? The idea, like things like that, like have lived on, I would say, more because of the plays.
Oh, yeah.
Than because of the idea of that character, right? Sure. So I think
we also have the Electra complex.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And the Medea complex.
Mm-hmm. What's the Medea complex? Just wanting to kill your children?
Yeah, but the problem with that is that it characterizes it incorrectly from what the play really is, in my opinion.
Sure.
But there's always that sort of thing, and I guess we kind of touched on this last week, but there's always that kind of fucked up thing where there's the headline says, like, modern day Medea drowns her children in a bathtub. And you're like, oh, Jesus. You know, but like, it's evocative. We know exactly what that means right away. Even if you're not a theater person, you're like, oh yeah, Medea, you know, I heard about that in sixth grade or whatever. So it's very interesting. Same with Electra. And then, you know, Trojan Women is one of those things that I would say is more theater minded. We know it because we're in theater.
Sure.
A lot of people don't know that play necessarily.
And I've actually never read it before, so I'm excited for this week. Yeah.
Trojan Women's fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's...
It's like Lysistrata.
The chorus is really heavy.
Lysistrata is another one that's like that, where we know it because we're theater people.
Now that one I've read a million times.
Cool. Well, Euripides nuts. I'm excited to get into it. Do you guys want to talk about the play?
Yeah, let's fucking do it.
So, Scott, you chose Electra.
Yeah.
Why'd you choose it?
Well, I kind of knew it. I've only seen it one time. I saw it. It was done at Penn State and featured a friend of the pod and my acting partner in last year's Fringe show, Nedra Gallegos. But I remember it because it was one. It wasn't the first Greek I saw, but it was done in a really cool space. It was a thrust space. But but very much the audience is very much on top of it, and the space is really cool. It used to be a slaughterhouse back when Penn State was founded as an agricultural college. So the way where you play in the space is where they would bring up the cattle for auction, and they would take them downstairs to what is now the dance studio and dressing rooms, and that's where they would do the slaughtering.
Whoa!
And, yeah. Wow. And so, but they offered it to the theater program, like, I guess in the 80s or something, to turn into a theater.
Huh.
And it's this amazing space to do stuff in. So I saw that, and, you know, I don't have a lot of memory of it, but I do remember kind of going, oh, this shit's cooler than I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and
you
so
an
it kind
of
changed my mind. Opened me up a little bit to it, because I'd always been like, sure. I'm still kind of poo-poo about the Greeks in general,
sure.
Just because of what I've seen and or haven't seen, really.
Right.
But this one, yeah, it sort of stuck with me in that sense.
Hmm. Siege, had you read it before?
Possibly. I don't know if I had read it or not before, but I zipped through it and I was like, I looked up the myth and the story behind it first because I knew I'd read Aeschylus's Agamemnon. I'd read the Oresteia, which she's part of it in the second play, The Libation Bearers. So I knew her story, but I don't know that I've ever read this one specifically. But right. I read it in a sitting. Like it was a quick little read for me and I enjoyed it.
Nice. Yeah, I was reading it going like, I know this story. Why do I know this story? Because I wouldn't have, I mean, it's not a story that I don't think is necessarily like widely
It's not
known,
a big one.
Right, right.
You know like Agamemnon, you know about her dad and how yeah. he was killed, but that's mm-hmm. kind of, you don't, mm-hmm. people don't know a lot about the fallout.
It's
I
like,
think,
yeah, it's like I know the lead up. Mm-hmm. But I don't know anything during or after, right?
Right.
It's that kind of
right,
thing.
Right.
And there's not like a lot of besides like the Jennifer Gardner Marvel movie, Elektra, right, which has nothing to do with this. There's never been like an Elektra movie that I am aware of. I'm sure there are. I'm just
there's
saying,
been
like,
a lot that have been influenced because I just was looking this up and I can't think of any off the top of my head. My only connect to Elektra, I know I said it last week, was she was my favorite American gladiator in the 90s. She
yeah,
was so
that's
pretty.
Right. So pretty.
She's so pretty.
She was on there with Diamond and God, who I used to love the 1990s American Gladiator. It was the fucking best.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Well, okay, so apparently there's a movie called Elektra in 1962. But like I can't, you know, I mean like but to me it's not a mainstream thing. It's not something we know mm. super well. Like you said there's the complex, I guess, but besides that,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know this story, but I was reading it going, "Wait, I do. Why do I yeah. know this?" I think I had read the Sophocles one in college.
Sure.
But I don't know why that one would have been handed to me over this one.
It also just overlaps. I mean, that's the interesting
yeah,
thing, too, is that all these myths and the plays and the stories, they all kind of overlap. And
is there pop culture? That's what they're writing about.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they're going to something that's going to appeal to people. So I think that that's why it becomes, you know it even if you don't know it, one of those things.
Yeah.
It's there's three Spider-Mans. There's also three Electras.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right, right. Exactly.
And then there's the one where they all Spider-Mans. Come together and they're
oh my God.
Electra No Way Home.
What are we writing that play?
Yeah. Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah. I'd watch it.
It's pretty
anyway,
easy.
So yeah, but I think this is let's get into it because I
yeah.
it's one that I think a lot of our listeners probably haven't engaged with, but like it's one of those that actually I said it to a couple people the other day. I was like, oh yeah, we're about to cover Elektra, and they're like, I've read that, and I was like, oh really? And they were like, yeah. Wait, what's it about? And I was like, oh, it's about, you know, this one. And then they were like, oh no, I haven't read that. It's one yeah. of those that you assume maybe you have because it mm-hmm. sounds like one you should have. But mm-hmm. I don't think most people have.
We've all covered it in Theater 101. And,
yeah, they talked about it. We just didn't read
and
it.
We just like,
she's a popular
yeah.
character in Greek plays. I mean,
sure.
And it's, you know, and it's a cool story. Like it's a interesting, gripping story. And
yeah.
it's bloody and it's revenge and, you know, it's parents, it's family, it's soap opera, you know. It's,
yeah.
It's got it all. It's no, got no, it all.
It's fun. Got it all.
Okay. Well, first of all,
yeah.
let's let CJ do her thing.
Yeah, please.
CJ's breakdown.
Electra has had it rough since her dad, Agamemnon, was killed by her mom, Clytemnestra, and her gross boyfriend. The new royals married her to a poor, moved her out of the palace, and she hasn't seen her brother, Orestes, since he's been banished. Cue return of a pissy Orestes.
Whoa.
He's fixing for some regicide, and Electra has some matricidal thoughts of her own. What will the gods think?
Damn. Yeah, that's married a poor. But she he treated her well, and so she was nice to him.
Yeah,
and,
well, he didn't fuck her.
Mm-hmm. No, he honored her virginity and her rank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, I mean,
sounds like a
I
cuck.
Think if we, I think, right? I think if we probably look at most Greek plays, we would notice this too happens all in front of a house.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep
someone's
it simple.
Front porch.
I mean, you didn't have wings and you didn't have, you know, fly systems back in the day.
Oh, I know, but it's always in front of someone's house. And all of the crazy shit happens off stage or in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
And then a messenger comes and tells you about it.
Yeah, the most interesting thing for me, and this is kind of, I'd read this as I was starting to read the play, is the conflict between Clytemnestra and Electra, mm-hmm. and who's motivated by what, and what accusation is the truth. So Electra accuses Clytemnestra of killing Agamemnon, her dad, mm-hmm. because she wants to marry, what's his name? How do you pronounce that?
I didn't even write it down because I had a hard time.
We'll call him
Al.
Al, yeah.
Allie.
And so, and there's an expedience to it, and there's lust and all that. And Clytemnestra is like, no. I killed your dad out of for justice because he sacrificed your sister, Iphigenia, in order to get some stuff. So you tell me who's right and who's wrong. Like,
well, and one thing I wrote in caps in my notes was beware nostalgia, because mm-hmm. Electra and Orestes are on the side of their father. But then if you go back into history, Agamemnon, yes, killed Iphigenia, even though Clytemnestra begged him not to. Right. Then he went away to war for 10 fucking years, disappeared, mm-hmm. after killing her daughter, and then he comes back with a concubine, and he's like, hey, I got a second wife, deal with it. Like, I might get a new boyfriend and get pissed off too. But sure. they're forgetting everything, and I love Clytemnestra's speech when she comes in, when they invite her over to Electra's house, and she comes in and she explains herself why she did what she did. I'm not saying it's okay to go out and fucking kill somebody for that, but it's like, she didn't do it because she's an evil bitch. And I would also be interested to read some of these other plays where you actually meet the boyfriend, the Claudius type.
Yeah. Sure.
Because I feel like there are some other plays or stories where I have heard him, he is in her ear the whole time saying, we got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do this.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, my hot take on this, like, I was getting notes of suburban white women that voted for Trump. Of like, I mean, you want to cheer for Electra because she's your protagonist in this, but I kind of had a hard time with it where it's like, you're not seeing the whole picture here.
Right.
And you're jumping on this bandwagon of this great king that was killed. He was a motherfucker and he killed your sister. Like, do you not remember that?
Right.
So yeah, that was my big hot take on this. It's a complicated fucking play.
It is.
And the person that wins out is maybe the person that doesn't deserve to win in the end, especially at the point when they kill Clytemnestra.
Yeah, I don't know.
When I'm like, I don't know that I'm on your side anymore, you know?
Right.
I think that's why you call it a Greek tragedy, because I don't know if there's any right person. Do you know what I mean? I'm not justifying any murder, but like... But I see your point entirely about that motivation and where it all leads to. It all leads to just disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. You know, and you know, we digression, but we had talked a few weeks ago about going to see Old Boy, Chan-wook Park's Old Boy, which, you know, is part of his revenge trilogy, which is very much a meditation on just the destruction of it, just the how you it's the dark path, it's the force. Once you start down it, forever will it dominate your destiny.
Right.
Consume you, it will.
Consume you, it will.
And I don't know if y'all noticed at one point, I think it's when, like, Orestes and Electra have been reunited and they make their plan and they say, okay, break. And he goes off to kill Al, the new king. And the chorus comes on. It's just the chorus on stage and they tell the story of the Golden Fleece. And I'm like, this is an interesting connection between this and Medea, this hearkening back to of like the
Right.
Golden Fleece was this big sought after thing. And it kind of only like brought a bunch of like pain and suffering with it, you know?
Sure.
And I was like, this is an interesting connection between Electra and Medea, personally. And I wondered, I mean, if he was thinking in that vein when he was writing it.
Maybe.
Right. Yeah, it's really this sort of I kind of took it as an exploration. I like, who is your hero here? I mean, your protagonist is Electra because that's the name of the play. But
Sure.
who's the good guys and who are the bad guys? Is anybody really truly a villain
Does anybody
until they
really know what
act?
time it is? Does
Does
anybody
anybody
really care
care?
about time? Sorry. Yeah, I'm with you. No, I agree.
Yeah,
Well,
it's
okay.
not.
Morally, I guess that's a question to ask. Who is in the right here? Or is anyone? Because you're saying, CJ, not really, you're not really on anyone's side by the
I don't ever think it's really okay to fucking kill anybody, but I guess if I was
end.
producing this play, I would make it way more great. Like, honestly, I wish fucking Euripides would have written a play called Clytemnestra, to be quite honest, if he's
Oh,
going to be
yeah.
writing these great women in Greek mythology. I feel ultimately, I felt bad for Clytemnestra the whole time. If I was producing this, I would make it seem like, and of course you never meet him, I would make it seem like the new king is the evilest of evil.
Right.
Sure.
It's also, you know, there's also sort of the detachment in terms of social morality. The idea of
Right.
blood for blood in Greek times, that was law. That
Eye for an
was
eye. I
an
mean, it
eye for an
shows up in the
eye.
Bible years later.
Yeah, you know, we know where they got it from. But so, yeah, I think that the interesting thing is the aftermath, is the pondering of it. And I can see that a really well done production would have just been like hardcore and hard to watch. Like, well, yeah, and where you are at the end of it, in the aftermath of the thing, because we haven't really talked about Orestes either, and like how he's the rage and she's the sort of heart behind it. Electra's kind of the blood pumping behind it.
Right.
Sure.
Well, and he's kind of a Hamlet character. His
Yeah.
dad is killed by the bad guy. Well, and not, I mean, obviously Gertrude doesn't kill Hamlet Sr., but then he's banished and he's back for blood. He's back to kill the bad king.
Right.
The other, I think another theme that came out in this play for me, it was a line that was towards the end of the play, and it was, I mean, I liked this translation. It was Philip Vellacott. It was the Penguin Classics book, but it was like the perfect mix of like contemporary and old-timey language for me. Like I still understood it, but it was still high language, you know what I mean?
Sure.
The quote was, "Frightening tales are useful. They promote reverence for the gods." Which I think,
Interesting.
you know, it's we're talking about like who's dealing justice here, and it's people dealing justice, but are they doing it in the name of the gods? Because the feeling I get from this play is they are doing the gods justice when they kill the bad king.
Right.
It's the moment when they bring Clytemnestra in and kill her when the gods are like, "Hold the fuck on. You can't
Right,
do that.
right,
That's not
right,
right.
right.
Her life isn't yours to take." And then Orestes gets banished again and ultimately tormented forever. And Elektra gets to get remarried to, like, she marries up a little bit. They're both banished. Like, they can't come back.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess in, I just read a little thing. I guess in the Libation Bearers, Aeschylus' version of this, that Elektra doesn't have much of a personality. She kind of goes along and Orestes tells her and she's like, well, that seems bad. Let's kill mom, you know?
Mm-hmm. And in this one, she's kind of like, great, now we're going to kill mom and you're going to help me.
And that's the basis of the Elektra complex as defined by Carl Jung, is that sort of obsession with the father figure to the point
where... Is that Jung or Freud?
Freud is Oedipus, Jung is
Elektra. Oh, I didn't know Jung
came
up with his own fucking thing. That's fun. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Jung is profoundly better than Freud on all fronts. Like, I mean, and moved on so far from everything that Freud was doing, right? It's sort of the mentor-apprentice thing, or then the apprentice, like, goes on to be the better version of, in my opinion. Yeah, sorry.
No. It's totally cool. But yeah, I think that's interesting, and I guess the Sophocles version, really the differences between the two is really about the characterization and how their motivations come about and are unveiled as the play goes along.
Well, and I was really thinking of I think Bailey, you asked it last week, of is Euripides a proto-feminist? And I was thinking about that, and I think somebody brought this up, so I don't want to take credit for it. As I was reading this and, you know, looking down his list of plays, that he has a ton of women in it, and the chorus in this, again, is a chorus of townswomen. I almost wonder if Euripides was watching other dudes write plays and looked around. He's like, listen, there's half of the people here that nobody's written plays about. Maybe I should just tap into that.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of material. So maybe he's not a feminist. Maybe he's just like wanted to write shit that nobody else was writing.
For sure.
No, I dig that. I absolutely dig that. We should also talk about how... Euripides makes fun of Aeschylus.
What part was that?
It's the reveal of Orestes. So in the libation, he's revealed through a series of tokens. He has like a shawl or a piece of clothing that was given to him when he was
hair.
A child that she remembers, and a lock of hair,
and
then a footprint. Which doesn't make any sense that her footprint would match his footprint.
As a
sibling.
I remember this now.
And then Euripides is like, let's put a scar on his head, then we know for sure.
Well, and Elektra, also, like, we're gonna laughs at it. Elektra's like, what the fuck? Tokens? No, I don't need those things to recognize my brother.
No, there's no reason. Yeah.
The quote is, there is no reason their hair should match.
A lot of people have our color of hair. Why would our footprints match? Like, I do remember that part now.
Would in no way resemble her smaller foot, and it would be illogical for a grown Orestes to still have a piece of clothing made for him when he was a small child.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. No. Let's give it to our buddy Rips. Like, that's
throwing some shade.
That's a good plot device. We'll use a scar or a birthmark.
The scar he received on his forehead. Is a mock heroic allusion to Homer's The Odyssey.
Yes.
Right? Because Euryclea recognizes Odysseus because of his scar when
he
comes back. She's like, oh, I know that scar. I took care of you, you know. So I know that that's the scar or whatever. Or is that his wife, Euryclea? I was thinking that was the nurse that
sounds right.
Anyway, so all very interesting. But they're referencing things. They're referencing stories people know. They're referencing plays that people know. Like, it's parody.
Yeah,
it's
they're,
great.
They're riffing. They're jamming. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like you said, CJ, it's kind of amazing that it's almost this little microcosm of what, like, Hollywood is now, or, like, entertainment is now. All happened already in Greek, ancient Greek theater. Like, it's like they already did the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We just don't know about it.
We're just on a spinning wheel, y'all. That's
it. But, crazy.
But all those references are so cool. It's like in the Barbie movie with the 2001... yeah, homage at the top. And it's like, you know, it, you know, call and response and calling back to things. Yeah, it's cool.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it.
May I just say?
You may just say.
The punishment that Elektra gets in the end is what I would like to see for most politicians.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want them killed. I don't want them thrown in jail. I just want them to be stripped of their titles and their stuff and make them middle management at an Applebee's somewhere.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Agreed. Yeah. I think it'd be fun and hilarious. I
mean, make them live like a poor.
It's called CJ Justice.
CJ Justice.
Martial law.
Yeah, well, we just made an hour long CBS drama series.
I already sold it.
Canceled after the pilot.
No, it'll go on for 14 years, and you'll hate your life in year 14 having to play.
Speaking of this, CJ and I wrote a script together years ago that I've just been passing around and trying to get someone to read it forever. And it's an official selection at the Horror Origins Film Festival in 2023.
Nice.
We're gonna be famous.
We're gonna be famous. But it's pretty cool. It is pretty fun.
Yeah.
A film festival is like a Dionysia.
A bacchanalia.
A bacchanalia. Yeah. What else
we're
is
just
there?
We're just saying words.
Random fucking words. What else is there? Because this is, I mean, obviously, like with anything, we could talk about all the history and all the academics surrounding it. But really, at the end of the day, my question becomes like, is this, if our purpose here is debate the definition of theater, then I guess the question, because obviously this is theater, the question then becomes to me is like, is this producible today, and is there a reason to produce it now? And if you did, what would you do with it? Or would you just put it up and everybody's wearing fucking togas?
No, I love that question, Bailey. I think that there's a lot to be said about it. And not to call back again to Chan-wook Park, but like a meditation on revenge is timeless. You know, it is. That's the thing about the Greeks. And I think that what I kind of am rediscovering and admitting to myself is that there is sort of a raw humanity that is addressed in these plays. It is all obviously heightened. It's all obviously, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Pieced together in interesting ways. But yeah, this is a hot show. Like, you could do a lot with this. You could do a lot with, you could set it in so many places. You could have badass music to it. You could.
Is there anything come to mind? Do you have anything that you're like, this would be perfect set here?
Oh, no, but like just something raw, like a biker gang. You know what I mean? Just something like, just
that'd
something,
be cool.
That, you know, metal. Like every time we talk about the Greeks, I sort of think about metal. Like just
lots
like,
of stabbing and blood and dragon chariots. Like, and
electric Elektra.
Yeah.
I really am interested in the whole thing of like, I was comparing this to Medea while I was reading it too. And in Medea with the chorus and Medea, you hear them talking about like how women are constantly fucked over and they're sick of it and so on and so forth. And in this one, I know I brought it up earlier. It's interesting to me how anti-woman it is, because they're constantly talking about being the weaker sex and how evil Clytemnestra is. And I am interested in that whole thing of believing something that is completely against your own interests.
Right.
And
right.
That is something that is very like front and center right now the world over. And I don't know, I'm not saying we put it in 2016 or something, but I am interested in that theme, and it's something that I think needs to be explored in America about like, why are mostly white women, suburban white women, like this against themselves and against other women? And
it's almost like it'd be interesting to set it like at a school board or something, or like or like something that's like really specific that like, I don't know what that would be. Maybe that's too specific, but like something that isn't political that could get politicized really quickly.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was writing about, I'm sure this was considered incredibly political.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I mean, I hate to go with a cliche, but even like setting it in Hollywood, you know.
Well, that was my first thought. Right?
Yeah, you know, is that, you know, she's living with, you know, an out of work actor in a small apartment, but he treats her good, and then all of a sudden
she's Mila Kunis and he's Ashley.
Well, and this, I mean, this is also like Madea. It's a story. It's a celebrity story.
Exactly.
Like, these are famous people.
Exactly.
And that is very interesting. I mean, I guess all of these plays, it's not like they wrote plays just about some random character they made up. They're mostly about people that they would have already known, right?
Right.
Yeah, of course.
I can't think of any examples that don't pull from. I mean, Shakespeare did the same thing. Shakespeare never wrote an original story, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's pulling from source material.
What was the one, the Romeo and Rosaline, the pirate's daughter?
Ethel, the pirate's daughter.
The pirate's daughter.
Adventure, love, and a bit with a dog.
That sounds original to me, Scott. But
yeah, well, I don't know. Like, what do I know? What do I know?
Oh, Shakespeare in love. We love it.
Thanks, Harvey Weinstein.
Speaking of Hollywood.
Speaking of evil people that should be murdered.
Which, real quickly, let's speak on this real quick. The Ashton Kutcher, Mila Kunis.
Did something happen that I missed?
Do you not know about this?
Tell me.
Okay, so Danny Masterson, the Hyde from That 70s Show, who
I heard about that motherfucker.
Yeah, he's officially convicted of multiple charges of sexual assault, and he
30 years
to life. Like,
thank
he's
goodness,
a piece of shit. Like, goodbye forever. Fuck you. You're a Scientologist. Fuck you. Nobody likes you. But apparently, some people do like him because a bunch of celebrities. Wrote him leniency notes, like character notes to the judge to be like, hey, don't sentence him too hard. Now, they wrote these letters after conviction. They did not write these pre-conviction. So this was not them being like, we're pretty sure he didn't do this. This is them being like, we know that you've already convicted this guy, but we love him, and here are the reasons why. And it's a lot of bullshit, and there's like 100 billion awful, awful, awful things surrounding it. Mm-hmm. But it's all kind of driven by Scientology, and Ashton Kutcher has a company that is all
nonprofit.
Nonprofit for called Thorn, that's all about like sex trafficking and all this stuff. So he's
for
already
kids,
stepped
yeah.
down. He's already, because the note came out. The note was leaked because a judge can make those things public, and decided to, because he was like, people should know how many people wrote positive notes about this. Put it out. There was the same thing that happened with Iggy Azalea and the Tory Lanez thing. But so it all pours out, and the notes are like this. It's like I'm not going to get into it, but all of it is like shit that these people are like digging into it, finding all of the things wrong with it, and like.
So Ashton stood up for him and stuff.
So did Mila. And then when it all dropped, Mila and Ashton made a video that was supposed to be an apology video, but they end up being like, obviously, we don't like what he did, but we're just trying to help our friend and whatever. And you're like, whoa. So they've both sort of canceled themselves. It's like outside of cancel culture at this point. It's like they've just kind of shit the bed and like, you know... Their publicist apparently just had no idea how to help them through any of this. So they've just like royally fucked themselves. And a few other people have too, who wrote these letters for him. And it all sort of ties back to like Mila and Ashton, how Mila was 14 years old and he was 19 years old when they first were on the show together. And there's all this weird shit surrounding it and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And it just, it's all fucked.
Hollywood.
Right?
Come on.
But Elektra almost feels like somebody writing that a celebrity story for people to come and sort of watch as like, not gossip, but like, you know, the real, true story.
This is how they are. This is how these famous people are.
Yeah, it's true. And I think... Nothing's changed, CJ. You're correct. It's all just a loop.
Spinning wheel.
Yeah.
Spinning wheel.
I don't know why I digressed into that, but now
I remember. No, I'm glad I knew that. I heard about his sentencing, but that's all I had heard. Because when I heard the sentencing, I was like, fucking great.
Well, the best part is we stan a legend, Topher Grace, the only person who always refused to kiss Mila Kunis on the show. He's the only person on the show that never, only man that never kissed her on the show.
Good job, Topher.
He did not write anything for Danny Masterson. All he did, he and his wife posted one single post that said, like, we believe victims, anyone who does things like this should be rotting in jail, goodbye. Like, that's it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, good job.
That's how you should have handled it.
Sometimes friendships should be over.
Shit, like, right. it's the Scientology shit, though. They're all tied into that stuff, and it's just like, it's bad. It's Ashton and Milo used to be, too. They're not anymore, apparently, but... Mm.
Yeah. Cults, y'all. Cults.
Yeah. Leah Remini's doing some great work, though, so...
Fucking love Leah Remini. I want to be friends with her.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to say about Elektra?
No. If you're doing it, let us know. I'd love to be able to go see it. Yeah, give us a call.
My other favorite line that Elektra says is, take your courage in both hands. It's a good line.
It's a good line.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah.
Charged. Take your dick in both hands.
CJ.
Ooh.
No, I'm really glad. I'm just really glad I read it. Like, I am enjoying this series. I'm enjoying the reads way more than I thought I was going to. So, this has been a delight.
Nice.
Good pick.
Scat?
No, yeah, I really enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I've enjoyed both of these more than I thought I would, to be perfectly honest. I was kind of like, I gotta read Greeks, but
here we go, Greek shit.
But yeah, I think it also just comes with age and experience too. I think that we not to toot our own horns, but we've read a lot since we started this podcast.
True,
a lot plays, a lot of very different texts, and so I know that for me, I read faster. But I also just notice more comes out right at the top, you know, themes emerge more quickly. Yeah. I can define what's happening more quickly. And so I think that's another reason. Also, they're both of these are short, tight plays, Medea and Elektra. And so I was kind of dreading, oh, my God, like
Trojan
9 hours.
Dude, Trojan Women's like 35 pages.
Yeah.
I think it's even shorter than these first two.
Yeah,
them,
it is.
So.
It's real tight. Real tight.
Tight.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
CJ.
Insert stinger here.
Okay. Let's.
That should be a stinger in and of itself.
We should spotlight some LA theater, though. So
yes, please.
Get ready to insert your stinger, Scott. You ready?
I'm ready.
LA Spotlight.
Doesn't he die when he gets rid of his stinger?
Not Scott.
Nope. Just grows right on back.
Yeah.
God.
Right on back.
Okay, I'll go first. As we were bringing up earlier, Devin Siddell, who's fucking awesome, has gone to Ensemble Theater Company in Santa Barbara to do Larissa Fast Horses, the Thanksgiving play.
Yep.
It is playing October 5th through the 22nd. Go to etcsb.org.
etcsb.org. Scott?
Do it. Yeah, I got a couple to shout out. By the time you hear this, we will have already seen it. But we're going to go, CJ and I are going to see A Light in Dark Places at the Stella Adler. It's a series of plays that deals with suicide and loss. Our friend Scott Golden is directing one of the pieces. It's like five short pieces. Bailey, if you want to join us, we're going Saturday night. So that's happening, and I think it's got
theater.
I guess it's got one more week, and then opening September 22nd at the Broadwater main stage is Interact Theater Company. They're doing Life Sucks by Aaron Posner. It's supposed to be quite funny and good, but it opens September 22nd. Check out Interact LA, all one word, .org to get tickets and more information. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go.
Yeah. I don't have anything except that October 7th and 8th at the Broadwater, Sacred Fools is producing a play that I wrote called Mothers of God, and Our casting meeting is tomorrow. We're super excited.
Yay!
Yeah, casting's the best. So we're looking forward to that. It's a staged reading of a play about the five women listed in the lineage of Jesus Christ and how their lives intersect outside of time in a Reno motel.
Love it.
And it's fucking...
It's pretty fucking good, dude.
Crazy.
It's pretty fucking good.
It's a crazy script. Yeah. People are responding really well to it, so that's always
good.
Nice.
We should say it's at the Broadwater Black Box specifically.
The Black Box.
And
the best, the only space.
Keep an eye on sacredfools.org for more information. Tickets will be on sale soon. If they're not already, they might already be on.
Dope.
On sale by the time
I'm excited
you
to see the imagery too that the designer made. That'll be
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But thank you for joining us for part two of three of Euripides Nuts. This is this has been Electra, and we'll see you next week for Trojan Women, and then after that is a Bailey's pick. Did I already say what we're doing? What I'm doing?
You've joked about some stuff. I don't know how serious.
Well,
you've been
nonsense
about it.
Is for sure happening, but I think what we're
I'm sick that week.
I think I'm gonna start my Mankin series. I think.
Doing
his like animated stuff specifically. Like I don't think we're gonna recover Little Shop, but
right.
I did some Mankin live stuff over the weekend.
Oh, fun! Mankin rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I did some of the Disney lives.
Yeah, he rules. Okay, Siege.
Do y'all have questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Fact! Our theme song is better than your fucking theme song.
Bitch!
Boom.
Hostile.
Ryan also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. And then finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
A Hefeweizen.
A Hefeweizen.
Or a nice harp. British.
A harp or some sort of German lager.
Mmm, yes.
Or English ale, you know. Maybe she just wants a pint of Guinness.
Subscribe, rate, review. It really does help. We love you guys so much. Thanks for tuning in. Euripides is dense. So thanks for, you know, this is weird stuff. If you're a true nerd like us, though, you're digging it. So thanks.
Yeah.
We love you guys.
Time.
Yeah.
That's my cigar. You'll steal another. Hey, look, it's bedtime at the zoo. I thought that I'd surprise me, mother. If you can find her, who asked you? From Bottle Alley to the Harbor, there's easy pickings guaranteed. Got it. Try any banker, bum, or barber. They almost all knows how to read. Ding, 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 ding. It's a crooked game we're playing. One we'll never lose. Long as suckers don't mind paying just to get bad news. Ain't in a fine line, carrying the banner through it all. A mighty fine life, carrying the banner tough and tall. When the bell rings, we goes where we wishes. We's as free as fishes. Sure beats washing dishes. What a fine life, carrying the banner home for y'all.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater.
Hang out, Louis!
Theater, theater.